I'm a little bit like an onion. There's many layers and you've got to peel back the layers to be able to get to know me.
Nearly Beloved, we're gathered here tonight to get into a disgusting mud bath in front of other people with The Bachelor Australia 2020. My name's Lucy May. I'm your host for these proceedings. And my favorite piece of Gold Coast trash, Karen Pickering, is my co-host.
Actually, more properly, I'm just Queensland trash, just the whole state. But these tits are real, so.
And they're magnificent. We recorded this on Wurundjeri and Wadawurrung land. Let's get into it.
Did I just make the biggest mistake of my life?
I have a question for you.
Okay, let's go.
Would you rather dress up like a sexy beekeeper and swing swords around, or play chess with Gemma? And I think you'd win chess, to be honest.
I think I'd rather dress up as a sexy beekeeper.
Yeah.
Because I would not, you know, over the game of chess, I would not like to hear more deep dives into the pageant world. I've had enough of that. and that said, the same thing is ludicrous and not a real sport and barely a real pursuit.
Fencing.
Yes. I mean, it's just for rich people, isn't it? I mean, like, it's worse than skiing in that respect.
Worse than skiing.
Things on my list, Lucy, it's on my list with cruise ships and fireworks. Yep. I've got a list that, you know, will be actioned at some point if I ever get my hands on the levers of power. No more cruise ships, no more fireworks, no more chest.
No more fencing.
No more fencing. No more horse racing. No more Dutch pancakes. They're too small.
Is this a joke?
Yeah, so fencing's on that list. Well, I've got a question for you.
Okay. Don't you don't you want to know which one?
Oh, right. Which one would you choose?
You'd think I would have thought about this before, but given that I was asking you, but I reckon I'd give chess a go with Gemma because I'd definitely win.
You could go for a space jump afterwards.
Yeah, because come on, you could make up the rules to chess as you go along. And Gemma, who seems so sweet, she's such a lovable ding dong.
What makes you think she's sweet?
That's actually a really good question. I guess she's pretty and that.
Yeah.
Huh.
I know. That's funny how we ascribe those values to someone. Because you don't want to say, oh, you seem like a twit without giving a compliment as well. Like, she seems really nice but not super all there. But actually, is she nice? I mean, you know, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, she does pageants and she thinks it's reasonable to have like a dint in your skull from excessive
from having the tiara
of the tiara. I mean, you know, I don't think there's anything really to recommend her.
I will take that on notice. All right. Well, anyway, I think regardless of that, I would definitely win the game of chess.
Yeah, you'd definitely win the game of chess for sure. But and you would, you know, end up with all the pieces of both colours on your side based on the new rules that you would be instituting.
Exactly. And there'd be a complex, you know, trading and swapping, a compulsory acquisition of pieces on the other side that would have complex reasoning behind it that I'm guessing that Gemma might not follow.
Poor Gemma.
Poor Gemma.
I can feel sorry for her even if I don't particularly like her. I mean, I don't dislike her. I just don't think that there's anything there.
Yeah.
That weird thing.
Yeah. She took the mistakes in pretty good humour. Anyway, the space jumping and the the chess, which I will note, they weren't even playing chess. They were playing checkers of some kind. Anyway, but we'll move on.
Yeah, they also weren't fencing, Lucy. Like,
no, I think that's fencing. There's it's nothing. Just walk back and forwards.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, you know, nothing on the show is that, like, they weren't actually playing gridiron last week. They're not actually cocktail parties.
They're just punishments, long ritual humiliations. All right, you had a question for me.
Yes. Your question is, would you rather have a mud bath with Lockie or go to the Gold Coast with Roxy?
You are trash.
Well, Roxy would never go to the Gold Coast because she's not quote unquote Gold Coast trash.
No, she's Brisbane trash. Huge.
Roxy is, I don't think, yeah.
She's not trash, P.S. That was a joke. But
from a Queenslander.
Yeah, from a Queenslander. She's out of control. But what's your answer?
Okay.
Because if you were in the mud with Lockie, smearing the mud all over you with his giant hands.
Yeah.
And, you know, looking at you with his dead eyes, saying, "Oh, you've got nothing to worry about. I'm smitten. I just when I look at you, I just melt." Because he said that to everyone in the house.
And then he says the worst words that anyone can ever say, and I think we'll get into this later, of that a grown man could say, which is, "I'm just a big kid."
Oh God, that's still, I'm still cringing. I'm still shuddering from that.
Yeah, we'll get into that later. Look, I would I'd probably go to the Gold Coast with Roxy because why would I do that? I get to go to the Goldie and get that mud looks really unsanitary.
It looks like the last thing that I would want to do. Yeah. I mean, with anyone really, like just smear myself in clumps of mud. It just doesn't appeal to me. Going to the Gold Coast, on the other hand, definitely appeals to me.
Yeah. Oh, a proper little hotel holiday in the Goldie. Lovely. You got your pool in the hotel. You got the beach right there.
Love the Gold Coast. I could wax lyrical about the Gold Coast for hours. But having been a Queenslander and grown up with the Gold Coast as being like the old Gold Coast where we would go for holidays and stuff, it's a kind of, you know, it's a reflection on Roxy's like imagination and creativity that her insult is, you know, yeah, just trash from the Gold Coast, because it's like it's real, it like says more about her that she's kind of equating the Gold Coast with one aspect of it, which is
definitely
of, you know, a level of like carnivalesque silliness that you know is present in every city.
Yeah, and I would love one day to aspire to the equanimity that Caitlin displayed when Roxy's just spewing insults. Well, what Roxy sees as insults at Caitlin, and Caitlin's just sitting there, what? I don't care. Just drinking her champagne and like, yeah, bye. See ya.
I think at that point that if they're, I mean, they're clearly putting like crystal meth in Roxy's drinks.
Oh, yeah, something's going on.
They're putting Special K in Caitlin's.
She's dialed right down.
You know, fake, fine. Like she was,
I loved it.
I'm definitely Team Caitlin if I have to pick a side.
Yeah, agreed. Same. Roxy, there's something going on there.
So what do you think's going on with Roxy?
I think she's emotionally fragile and has probably chosen the wrong reality show to go on. I don't know what one would be better for her to go on. Maybe, no, she'd crumble in all these situations, wouldn't she? Survivor, probably no good. She'd get paranoid.
She's definitely going to paradise. They will be beating down her door to send her to paradise.
Yeah. It just, this is raises a, just how distressed she seems to get at the drop of a hat in the by the things that define the show in the context. So I'm trying to take it seriously. You're just laughing. But
I can't believe you'd kiss someone at a cocktail party. I was like,
yeah.
Well, not only is the show literally about everyone trying to kiss this person at the same time, and the only time you all see them is at a cocktail party, which, P.S., yeah. not a cocktail party, but rather a competition to see who can kiss him.
Yeah.
But also, what cocktail parties are you going to, Roxy, where people are not allowed to smooch?
Like, what's the point of that?
Why would anyone get so dressed up and get on the sauce if they weren't going to be, you know, getting a cheeky passion?
If they weren't going to, as someone said, peck on with them. I pecked on with him. It was like a little kiss. Who got a little kiss?
Caitlin.
Someone.
Caitlin.
Decided. She pecked on with him.
Yeah, I feel like it was. So yeah, she's very fragile, and she's also very volatile. She's not just
yes
in the corner crying. You know, at what is being done. That's so unfair. She's also lashing out at people and throwing actual tantrums, like,
yeah,
throwing at people, staring at people, yeah, dropping her bundle.
As Ariba said, out of four cocktail parties, which seems like a lot of cocktail parties given that there have only been six episodes, four cocktail parties, Roxy's broken down and cried at every one of them. So far.
Is this a joke?
Yeah. And it does kind of work well as a mechanism to make sure that everything is revolving around her, that all of the girls, the other women are comforting her, that they're not on their game, they're not concentrating on anything else, they're just comforting her. And then also that he will seek her out to check that she's okay, at which time she'll be like, oh, I'm so shocked. I can't believe you're seeing me like this. It's like, what did you think was going to happen, lady?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's a few possible explanations. Either there's a bunch of shit going down that we're not privy to.
Yes, that's one thing. A listener of ours astutely pointed out on Instagram that the reason that this run of episodes might have felt so strangely vague in the narrative, both vague and overwrought at the same time. Everyone's kind of shuffling around, freaking out, but we don't really know why. It seemed like Roxy was saying something that Juliet said or did something, but I didn't think that we actually saw what that was. So a listener pointed out, look, maybe it was that there was something they couldn't air for some reason, and they couldn't take that out without pulling everything else too. So they just kind of chopped that bit and then left all of the context around it. But what it ended up doing was just creating a huge gap in this narrative, and you couldn't follow the leaps of the story. Yeah,
like we're having trouble at this point piecing together sense, you know. So
yeah, story, the actual beats of the narrative, I don't know what happened.
Yeah, so in that regard, the show is failing at its job, which is to be an entertaining TV show. But I suppose it's succeeding at its other job, which is to, you know, pit women against each other and declare a basic man's affections to be the ultimate prize. No matter how much he doesn't, like, how many episodes have we had now? Five or six? And
six.
We know nothing about him. We, you know, he hasn't revealed anything about his personality, except to kind of seem more and more artificial.
Yeah.
The repeating of the same things and stuff. And he's not really opening up to anyone. He's not really growing in the eyes of the audience. And also all of the activities so far have just been so cringe and stupid. But, you know, I haven't seen another season. Maybe they always are.
Yeah.
Like, when I'm watching it now, I'm just like, what? Why are we doing this?
Yeah. We have discovered a couple of things about his personality, Karen, though. One, the aforementioned I'm just a big kid, which I'm going to hand over to you to launch into in a second. But the other one is I'm a terrible loser. So awesome. Not only are you childish, but you're a sore loser and you're not good at losing. Cool, 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 cool. I'm sure you're great fun.
How old is he? 30.
Yes. He looks a lot older.
Yeah, he looks a lot older. The beard and the enormity.
I think it's the lack of sun protection, actually.
It's the Bali lifestyle. Yeah, so sidebar for anyone listening that this is that I'm about to mention something that happens outside the show, which is that these revelations about, you know, the good old Daily Fail has like excavated Lockie's MySpace page from when he's a teenager, and there's some really disgusting garden variety racism from the time, which is 14 years ago that we established. So it's obviously a long time ago for him. It's when he's 16 and he's now 30. It's on MySpace. So it's clearly redundant in terms of like a platform. So he's like I feel like he's, if anything, he's becoming, in my mind's eye, he's just becoming more and more basic. He's just becoming more and more just unremarkable, you know,
unattractive, untrustworthy,
you know, like, and it's not because I think he's necessarily a racist now, because when you're a teenager, and I suppose he's a white boy growing up in Perth, he's adopted these gross anti-immigration attitudes that he puts on his MySpace, which no prizes for originality or probably even any thought going into that. And as you and I said privately, I would hate for every single thing that I ever said as a teenager to be wheeled out and sat in front of me and for me to have to answer for the idiocy of it. So it's not necessarily that I think he's, that that makes me think he's now a practicing racist. It just tells me that he had a total private schoolboy white bread upbringing.
Yeah, and a disregard for other people and a disregard for people who aren't white. And that does speak to character, I think.
Yeah, that I mean, when I was 14 or 16 or whatever it was, like, I was probably sprouting some really stupid shit, but it certainly wasn't like, you know,
straight up racism.
Yeah, straight up white supremacy or straight up racial antagonism.
Like, yeah, exactly.
It was like more like the first burn that served, you know, like it was stuff that probably probably like horrible ableist stuff or horrible, you know, things that we all have hopefully learned our lessons about and moved on from. And maybe he, you know, I'm sure that he is probably hugely embarrassed about this stuff, and maybe hopefully he's embarrassed because it's so bad and not because it tarnishes his reputation.
Yeah,
but it's
exactly.
Just all of it, the whole kind of thing just makes me think like, yeah, these last couple of episodes where, like you said, he was so proud of how competitive he was and how he hates to lose, which made me think, oh, yawn, you know, like type A masculinity bullshit. But then, yeah, the saying he wanted to have kids because he's a big kid, it was just like,
gross.
Oh, you're just so disappointing. And all of these women are too good for you.
Yeah.
Especially Irina, who you just said it to.
Irina, I love her. Imagine her being your nurse. You'd get better just from her love.
Just from her bedside manner.
Yeah. And she and Bella had that another sweet friendship moment, which I thought.
I told you they were so loved up.
Yeah.
Yeah, their cuddles. Their drunk cuddles give me life.
Lockie has just become boring and gross and unattractive to me for all of the reasons that you've stated. I am deeply glad that things that I thought and said and did as a teenager are not, there's not a permanent searchable record of it these days. But as you said, it wouldn't have involved anti-immigration racism. I'm sure it did involve, you know, sexism and, yeah, ableism and lots of things, but
lots of slurs yeah. and everything else that we kind of, you know, would cringe to think that we thought was edgy or funny or whatever. Yeah. And people will think the same thing about that, you know.
Yeah.
But I hope that it's, you know, I hope that it's embarrassing to him because it's so far from how he feels now and not because yes. it's, yeah. it looks bad, you know.
Yeah, agreed. There is something specific about it, though. I mean, we won't harp on about this too much more, but we want, you know, we'll move on. But it was that, you know, F off, we're full grossness. There's also, beyond being racist, there's something ugly in that this is this attitude of, I don't want other people to have what I have. And I know that obviously is part of the racism of it, but that's what I mean as well when it speaks to character, because I think that's the sort of thing that's how you see the world or not. Like, you see the world as a zero sum game where someone else getting something means that you don't have it. And
yeah, absolutely. At the time, you know, much more so than now, but you know, it's an ongoing shame on Australia that our treatment of refugees is so horrific. And so for him to be saying that at a time when there was a free refugee movement, there was a really strong, you know, it seems particularly, you know, gross that could be his view. That said, and I don't want to be, you know, an apologist for him, but I do think that when you're a kid, you do take on the political ideas of your parents and
the people around you. Yeah, for sure.
What you hear in your home and what you hear at the kitchen table and what you hear around the barbecue or whatever with your parents, friends and whatnot is kind of how you think. And it's your introduction to politics in a way. Not everyone grows up with progressive parents who have the you know, who take the time to talk you through your whole life, these values of respecting other people and respecting animals and respecting, you know, the environment and, you know, respecting yourself. Like, these are not present in everyone's home. And, and you know, I would say that someone growing up in Perth as a, you know, privileged white boy would maybe be even less likely to be exposed to good ideas about respecting all people and equality.
Yeah.
So not to slam our Perth listeners, I'm from Queensland, country Queensland, like I get it, but, you know, cultures, things don't happen in a vacuum. And him being a kid in Perth at that time, he would have been breathing some pretty putrid air, I think, about women, about refugees, about Indigenous people, about, you know, anyone who was different to him. So, you know, we've gone pretty deep on this, but yeah, it does make me think. It didn't make me think, oh, you're a bad person and this makes me hate you. But it did make me think, like, oh God, you know, you're just so average and
and disappointing.
And that's really, you know, that's really making the show a slog.
Yes, agreed.
Can we just circle back quickly to the big kid thing and say, to anyone who's listening who either doesn't have kids or is thinking about having kids or is partnered with someone and they're talking about kids, if a man ever says to you, I would be a great parent because I'm just a big kid myself, like,
is this a joke?
If you love them, you need to, like, non-violently shake that idea out of them.
Yeah.
Or run 1,000 miles and never have children with that person, because it's just such a common, again, basic trope of Australian masculinity to be like, oh, you're king of the kids, like, he's just he's so great with kids because he just, you know, he is a big kid or what. It's just so revolting. Because obviously it means that there's only one adult parenting and that this person thinks that their role as a parent is, you know, to do the
fun one.
Yeah, the fun one, and to do the 1% of all the hard stuff. But it's also, it goes to show, it speaks to someone who's never really thought seriously about the gravity and the work of parenthood and the work of fatherhood. And it's a big red flag. When Irina was like, yay, I was like, oh, honey, no.
Yeah, agreed. So much of being a parent is the boring adult stuff. And, yeah, God, it makes me shiver.
It's horrendous. And the other cliche is, like, the number of women who are like, oh, well, I have three kids, but, you know, one of them is my husband. It's like,
yeah,
can we all just agree that that's fucked and put a stop to it and not keep enabling it and not keep thinking it's cute and funny and not even joking about it? Because it's counterproductive. It puts women in the situation of having to be the only adult in the room and the only adult in their partnership. And it also really does men a great disservice, because if you think about the amazing, incredible, good, engaged, hardworking dads that are out there trying really hard to overcome all the shitty patriarchal conditioning, they're certainly not just, you know, a big kid
yacking it up,
just having a good time, you know, like they're taking it really seriously. And so we should all, you know, take a leaf out of that book, I think.
Yes. It's not to say that there's no joy or fun in being a parent. It's just that to be able to have that time, you have to put in a shitload of mundane drudgery, which is not fun.
But also, so, if the woman was like, let's just say it was like The Bachelorette, and Angie had said, I definitely want to have kids because I'm just a big kid.
Yeah.
Because I'm so immature. I'm basically like a five-year-old girl. And so it was great for me to have kids because I'll play dolls with them all day and we'll just, like, you know, do each other's hair, and it would be fucking absurd. It would be like people going, what is wrong with this woman's brain box? But also it wouldn't make sense within our cultural narrative. It would be like a crazy thing because people would be thinking, then who's looking after the kid?
Yeah, and exactly. It's cool. Like that.
Is that when the men are like, oh yeah, I'm just one of the kids, you know, and I'm just a big kid, so I understand kids because I pretty much am one, you know. That assumes that there's somebody who's actually in charge, who's actually doing the parenting, and guess what? That's mum. So
yeah.
Like
that's yes, that's mum. And we're talking specifically about the dynamic in
a vast number of heteropatriarchal
relationships.
Yeah, because we're talking about lots.
It's a specific trope. A specific trope.
And it's shite.
It is shit. It's utter shite. There's that Facebook page, Man Who Has It All, who posts funny things like, I'm so lucky. My wife packs her own bag when we're going on holidays. I just have to do me and the kids.
Or when it's like, what should we call a male tennis player? yeah, it's great. Yeah. That's the thing is that whenever I hear something like that really grinds my gears, like that has me like up out of my seat, a really good way of testing it is to gender flip it and go like, well, 100%. What, you know, when are women allowed to play these roles of like the gormless buffoon? And also, why do women not want to play those roles? You know, because they want to be competent and capable and, you know, in charge of their life. And why is it that there's this kind of whiplash with the male cultural narrative that it's like, I want complete control over every situation that I'm in, but also I'm incompetent and I can't make a omelette and I'm king of the kids and I can't run the washing machine or, you know, whatever. It's like, guys, you know, if you're the superior sex, then maybe.
Be superior.
Maybe lift, you know.
Elevate. Come on, people, this is Vogue. Let's lift. There's something else that terrified me a couple of times when I thought about it was the idea of sitting in front of Ariba and asking for a home loan. She's a home loan officer.
Oh, my God. Noises.
She would be terrifying. I love her. I love Ariba. Thank Ariba. Ariba would thank Ariba.
She's really good talent.
Love her.
But also she's also like, you know, being framed as only saying things in antagonism or retaliation, or, you know, she's always embroiled in some melodrama as well. And so going back to Roxy about, okay, what do we think's happening? One idea is that maybe there's a bunch of stuff missing that we're not getting.
Yes.
Two is how much are the producers making this stuff happen? Like, how much of are they telling Roxy that Juliet is saying stuff? Are they coaching Ariba to do, you know, are they basically like an episode of Unreal? Are they pulling the strings to an extent that, you know, for instance, having the mud bath at the cocktail party was obviously a choice.
It was such deliberate provocation.
It makes me think of what's her name? The amazing Tatiana, the Drag Race Choices.
Choices.
But what? Obviously, that could only be done with the producers' either help or like
dragging the golden bathtub.
Yeah, like obviously, Tara didn't like sneak out of the mansion and organize that herself. You know, so. Did the producers go, we're going to pull this ridiculous stunt, who are we going to, okay, Charlie, you do, you know what I mean? Like, is it,
is it
kind of stage managed to that extent? Because the, I mean, like I said, I've never said it, seen another Bachelor season, but the mud bath in the cocktail party did perplex me completely. I felt like I was like, have I like dropped acid or something?
Yeah, it was odd. The one bit that I loved was, so They got in the bath. They're smearing mud all over each other. Charlie gamefully took a big pile of mud in her, you know, done hair and makeup. And I thought, okay, yeah, you know, they've been in there for a few minutes. And then someone was chatting about it, said they were in there for a full hour. So there was a full hour of this cocktail party where they're just lolling about in the mud bath. Like
the magic of TV is that, you know, it probably took an hour. Because they had to keep getting shots and they had to like keep getting close ups or they had to keep reaching.
Yeah.
And then presumably like go and have a shower and go through hair.
That was the thing that I thought was such a power move was Charlie came back and she had fresh hair and makeup. Yeah. And I thought, so not only did you get in the bath in front of all of them, but then you went off and got glam again. Like, that's a power move. I thought that was so funny.
Even leaving aside the total bizarreness of it, it was really, like, while they were in the bath, it was really joyless and sexless.
Yeah, it wasn't hot. It was gross. It was lucky brownie beige undies.
I am so angry, like I can't even put it to words right now.
Nobody in fantasy didn't know he was getting his kid off. But I felt like there was no spark, there was no kind of excitement or joy or any kind of sense of like, this is fun, this is naughty, this is cool, I'm having a great time. It was just really forced and stupid. So I kind of, like, given that we just saw Bachelor in Paradise where the equally silly things that Glenn and Alicia were doing and put through were clearly like, sparkly and fun for them.
Yeah. That was hot.
Yeah. And we could see that there was genuine chemistry. Whereas, you know, Lockie and Charlie are both very attractive young people, like Kieran and Kiki are attractive young people. But when they kind of are rubbing all over each other, it's just like, I feel nothing.
Yeah. Slapping together like cloths,
like wet two cloths. Lamb chops. but I just didn't. Yeah, I kind of was just like, okay, that happened. Fine. But the other thing is, I don't really feel like he's had sparky chemistry with anyone.
Who did he was talking about? Irina saying that I get giddy or something when he's around her. Who else did he pash?
Well, he said Nicole. He's got chemistry with Bella, Nicole, Roxy.
Yep.
And Irina. Yep. They're the ones that he's kind of like, oh, you know, I just want to get lost in their eyes or whatever other garbage is out. But then when they actually are kissing, I'm like, okay, I've seen hotter kisses on Neighbours. Like,
Yeah.
They just...
In the coffee shop.
It all just doesn't seem convincing to me.
Yeah. Something that wasn't convincing as well was poor old Rosemary's rap.
I know this rap is kind of crap, but hey, I thought I'd give it a crack.
Rosemary, what? The less said about that, the better.
Oh, the penguin. And then she got booted at the rose ceremony and she had to slide on out of there on her belly.
I thought over the ice. She looked so dark when she was about to go. I thought she was gonna like turn around and go like, "You're all ugly sluts," or something.
Yeah. That would have been so good. Her really stiff passag hug of Lockie too, and he's like, "Oh, you know, bye." And she's like, "Yeah, see ya." And just did this like stiff as a board, stiff as a board.
And I really wanted to, like, when she got in the car, I was like, "I want to be in that car with Rosemary and hear what she's doing now." But then also I realized, oh, I just want to be in that car with Rosemary so I leave the show and never have to watch it again.
So you can just drive off.
I want to be Rosemary and have the show behind.
Yeah. And then as you turn the corner, she just puts her hand out to you and there's those the penguin foot coverings and you just put them on.
Yeah.
I'm also enjoying the seeming reassignment of Laura to just quotable talking head now. She doesn't seem to be having any interaction with Lockie. She's just saying quotes in the talking head bit.
Yeah. I mean, there seems to be a little bit of heat around her on Instagram and whatnot as being like, oh, you know, like turned out she's funny. And I'm like, is she? Like, I feel like the jokes are falling pretty flat. Like, oh, there's beef there. There's more than 500 grams of beef. I was like,
yeah.
Okay. And why? And look, maybe the producers are doing the same thing to her that they're doing to the women who keep mispronouncing things, where they're kind of showing it and then going like, doing, so that we can all kind of go, that didn't work. Like it's a stitch up. But I feel like, yeah, if Laura's there to provide the comic relief, she needs to lift as well. Everyone needs to like be better. Although I suppose Roxy is bringing the fireworks also on my list.
Yeah. She's bringing the fireworks also on your list. She is bringing it. Yeah, look, Laura is no Angie. She's no Alicia when it comes to the talking heads with their zingers.
Mm.
It's given me something at least. Ariba gives a bit of funny in those two. It's not really comedy. It's more scathing critique.
Yeah, there's nobody really funny in the house, it seems. I mean, apart from Steph.
We promised
that Steph was funny. And that was exciting, but then she's been kind of invisible since then. But I mean, I think she's getting the edit of, you know, Chekhov's gun. She's going to come back. Otherwise, they wouldn't have put her in the early ones so much.
She's definitely going to be on Paradise, right?
Steph. Yeah. Well, also, speaking of someone else we lost, goodbye, my love. Zoe Claire's going to be on Paradise for shiz. For shiz.
She did an actual Blinking White Guy meme reaction to something. I think it was during the rose ceremony and it cut to her and she was just like, blink, 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 blink.
Yeah, she's going to take her porcelain skin and high cheekbones to Fiji for sure.
Yeah, before they do, they need to have a serious PSA about sun protection.
They all need to have a proper talk about slip, slop, slap.
Oh, that was horrific watching everyone go crimson in the overcast Fiji sun. Ooh.
I suppose not as much because they were already fake tanned. So let's talk about Roxy's allegations. So
yes.
Roxy's like,
what are they?
What is the case that Roxy is making? Roxy's like, it's not right to talk to Lockie if you already have a rose, unless you're her.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not right to kiss him at the cocktail party.
Yep.
It's not right for him to go on a date too quickly after he went on a date with her.
Yeah.
It's not right to be from the Gold Coast. It's not right to get sick. That's not good.
That's right, and not go on the date.
It's not right to have fake hair, fake tan, fake tits, fake. I mean, they don't really stack up as
genuine grievances.
Reasonable complaints.
Well, given that Roxy cried when she had a rose and then cried also when she didn't have a rose, I don't know, what would she be cool with?
So she's angry at Caitlin for being too fake. And it's like, you're also covered in fake tan yourself. You have highlights in mm-hmm. hair yourself. You're covered in tattoos, presumably weren't born with them. So you've got this bizarre kind of standards for everyone else that you think you're exempt from. Like, you're just a mean girl. Like, you really are just spiteful and vicious to everyone. I was really annoyed that nobody told Roxy off, annoyed that it seemed in the wash up of her screaming at Caitlin and storming out, which, you know, Caitlin was being, I think, a bit rude or whatever, but she definitely didn't deserve to have, like, stripped off her. And then it seemed like in the wash-up afterwards, people kind of, like, the other women there kind of turned on Caitlin as well.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of that.
I didn't like it.
No.
Like Marg and Irina and Bella.
Who is Marg? Where did Marg come from? Why are we suddenly seeing Marg?
She's come out swinging. Which, like, I get it. Caitlin had ticked them off as well. But it's like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like Caitlin's crimes are that she's too bolshy she doesn't really care what the others think of her.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something more with Roxy, though. When I said she's seems emotionally fragile earlier in our chat, this is one of those instances, I think, that you've raised a bunch of times about duty of care as well. I don't think that Roxy is...
She's not coping. She shouldn't be there.
I don't think she's coping, no. And that seemed pretty apparent from early on. And I'm quite concerned about her.
Really?
I don't like the way that she... Yeah, I am. I don't like the way that she behaved at all in a bunch of the ways that you've listed. But I actually think, I think that there's something more going on with this just paranoid insecurity that I don't think it's the right place for her to be.
Maybe. She's just an arsehole.
Maybe. Both things can be true at the same time.
Not that I necessarily think only that of her, you know what I mean? But I think that because I'm aware that we're getting this very small insight into this whole person.
Highly chopped up together, edited.
Exactly. And they're all under huge kind of stress, and they're put under this stress in order to make them react in this way. But it's like, I kind of feel like sometimes there's a lot of, like, especially as women, I think we go to extremes sometimes to be compassionate, understanding, and look at people's behavior in context and say, well, you know, maybe it's this, and maybe we're missing this piece. And I think actually sometimes they're just being pricks. And I think that those things could, like you said, that they can both be true. But also I do think, you know, like, she's behaving very badly. And this spray that she gave Caitlin was really reeked of, you know, classism and internalized misogyny.
100%. I was going to say that I'm getting very strong kind of pick me bitch. I'm, you know, like, I'm not like other girls vibes from Roxy, that internalized misogyny.
Yeah. And that really sucks. And I mean, you know, that makes me like this particular outburst at Caitlin, this last one of all of her other ones, was the one that made me go, yeah, you know, maybe you're just not a very nice person.
It's very possible. It's happened before on reality TV.
It's so funny because, like, remember with Kira, like when Kira came on to Paradise, I was like, oh, you know, like the first couple of episodes, I just thought, you know, she was just sound bites of how great she was and how, you know, like she was just talking in the third person about how much better than everyone else she was. And I was like, oh, she's just insufferable. But then she kind of grew me really quickly. And I just felt like you could see straight away that this kind of vulnerability in her.
Yeah. Me liked
this kind of awkward, social awkwardness that meant that she kind of talks in these sound bites and slogans and stuff because she kind of doesn't know what else to say or, you know, and yeah. I really found that endearing really quickly. But, yeah, with Roxy I just feel like I'm not seeing anything redeeming.
Mm.
You know, she really thinks that the other women are fake bitches like Juliet and, you know, she's the fakest bitch in this house. She keeps, like, kind of slamming the other women and I just, you know, don't care for
it. You're never there for that.
No.
You're never here for slamming other women except for the gentle slamming of Roxy we just did.
Well, I mean, am I slamming her or am I just sort of...
Critique.
Yeah, maybe I am. I mean, but, like, to compare it to Ariba, for instance, like her kind of, you know, arch nemesis on the show, Ariba hasn't really slammed anyone.
No, that's true. Ariba pretty much only talks about Ariba.
Or she says, I don't like Roxy or I don't, you know, but she doesn't say she's a fake bitch or she's got fake tits or she's her look is bad or her, you know, she's just like.
She pointed out that she's cried at every cocktail party, which is factual.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, I don't feel like Ariba is taking cheap pot shots at anyone's appearance or where they're from or.
Yeah, true.
Or bursting into tears to get attention or whatever, you know. Like, I think that she's playing a pretty straight game. Yeah, and I stan Ariba. I think she's, like, the best thing on the show at the moment.
Yeah. That gives me an excellent segue into something else wonderful on the show that is now our regular segment of Let's Check In with the Rose Ceremony music. It was fucking bananas.
It was like a murder mystery or something, like.
It was. Well, I took specific notes because it struck me so strongly. But in episode 5, I specifically noticed it around Juliet's rose. There was this music that sounded like Stranger Things.
Juliet.
Like that 80s Netflix show. It was bizarre, completely crazy. And then last night, the episode 6 rose ceremony, it was just this intense, like pulsing, warlike kind of martial craziness.
Arena. Izzy.
But it was kind of like very cinematic. It was like the Titanic's going down or something.
Yeah.
Like very, very melodramatic. I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah, I've really been enjoying it a lot. Like, it gave me giggles both times.
And I know I'm not the only one who loves this, but I just love how breathless Usher is when he says their names.
Yeah. And how he whispers.
Chris, Lucy, Karen.
Oh, I just got ASMR, hair standing up on the back of my neck with you.
Should I make ASMR videos of me sending people home from rose ceremonies?
Yes.
Karen, you did not receive.
Oh, I just got it again. That's so funny. Oh, the hairs on my arms are standing up. Oh, I love it. That's nearly Jeff Goldblum level.
Yeah, I just love how he kind of walks in like so forlornly. And
genuinely sad to see them go.
My solemn duty to send you home in a limousine.
And he had a really striking purple paisley tie. Oh, no, purple, sorry. Sorry, oh, my God, purple leopard print tie.
Ah. Oh, can we also talk about how grossly ill-fitting Lockie's suits are?
So bad. Wow. What is going on?
Like, can't they take him to some special giant man tailor or something? Like, they're clearly too small, but they're, like, comically too short, both the jackets and the pants. I'm like, I don't remember on Maths, like, Seb looking like he was in
like capris
form suit or something.
Yeah.
Because it's like a guy that big, like Osha comes in and his suits are just like,
trim and yeah, they look great.
Like he was born wearing it. And then Lockie kind of lopes in and I'm like, oh, what's the, everything's flapping, everything's too short and too tight in one spot and loose in another spot. Like, dude, get it together.
Yep.
Is this a joke?
Yeah, and under all of that, he's wearing those beige brown
beige boxes. Bronze undies.
Yeah, just let your mind settle on that for a minute.
Wardrobe. You need to, like, I mean, the women look beyond, like, every single episode just, like, better and better and better. Ariba, best in club last night. I also enjoyed Bella's velvet bows.
Yep.
Yeah, amazing.
There was that shot of the three of Ariba, Christina, and Juliet standing next to each other, making hilarious facial expressions, and they were dressed in these gorgeous kind of Christmas bauble, like complementary colors.
Yeah,
it was like a gold, a red, and a green, or like a gold, a red, and a blue, or something. And it just, they looked so gorgeous all standing together.
I thought Rosemary looked really good last night too, in that kind of peachy scuba material.
Yeah, I thought it was a kind of lilac, but it was whatever it was. It showcased the gills.
Like melon, it was like a rock melony kind of corally, peachy vibe. With
I think you
hair.
Mean
not the purple hair.
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of her hair. I just wanted to note that you said rock melon, which is actually categorically incorrect. It's a cantaloupe.
It's so funny that you would say that because my grandfather grew rock melon. So you can't explain to me what their incorrect name is in a state that can't even fucking grow them.
That was a sick burn,
yeah.
Pickering.
That was a deep cut. So we're sad to see Rosemary go.
Yes.
We're fine with Zoe Claire going.
Yes.
Did anyone else leave that we even knew the names of?
Did Christina go?
Oh, yeah, Christina went. Yeah. So that little crew will be one short.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's going back to, I guess she'll go back to finish her PhD. She's a PhD candidate.
That's the real world.
The real world of higher, of postgraduate academic research.
The only other thing that I wanted to mention quickly was about Bella. You know, you were saying that you were a little bit worried about whether Roxy should be there. In the show.
Yeah.
In terms of like how her, you know, mental and emotional health is holding up. I kind of also thought that about Bella. I felt like Bella and Luna having their kind of heart to heart about, you know, you got your wish, Lucy, that the stakes have gotten higher because these two beautiful young women obviously have become really fast friends and they both feel strongly about The Bachelor, and that was really touching, I thought, and really believable, and one of the few moments in the series so far where I felt like nobody was bullshitting and nobody was acting. But it did kind of worry me, like Bella was saying, like, Irina's just like the better version of me, and I just thought, times in my life where I have thought that about my friends, I was extremely depressed.
Like, yeah,
that is a thought that you have when you're a younger person, where you kind of compare yourself to your friends and go, why would anyone want to go out with me or hook up with me when they could get together with her and she's so much better? That's like partly, you know, youth and immaturity and like figuring out a way of valuing yourself, but it's also a bit scary and a bit sad to think of Bella feeling like that. So that
I thought that too.
As well, in a bad way. It made me think, oh, is she all right? Like, we've talked about it before, like, is everyone on the show really in the strongest kind of frame of mind to be putting themselves through these kind of onerous emotional upheavals? We shall see.
To make sure that we end on a high note, I think I'm just going to play a recording of Charlie saying Struth.
Struth.
You can ask us to marry you on Nearly_Beloved on Twitter, Nearly Beloved Podcast on Insta, and nearlybelovedpodcast@gmail.com.
Is it appropriate to take your clothes off at a cocktail party?
I now pronounce this podcast finished.